Thank you, Carmel. Good morning, everyone. Great to see all of you who are here, and great to have all of you who are joining us at home, and we're looking forward to catching up afterwards for some food and a nice picnic together. That was kind of a big and heavy reading, and as Steve said, we're in the midst of a topical series on social justice. And as we just go to our first screen, we haven't sort of officially named this series. It occurred to me that we've never really given it a name, and that's because I think we've struggled a little bit over what to call it. But I'm using the term social justice because it's a name that we're familiar with. If you talk about social justice out in society, out in the world, people know what you're talking about. And the interesting thing is that the world and society around us seems to be growing a social conscience, a lot more than when I was growing up. Suddenly people are concerned about the cars that they drive and how much fuel they use and using energy efficient appliances at home. People care how their food is being grown. They care who is making their clothing and products, where they're being made. Are they being made ethically, using little children, or are they being made and people being given fair wages? People are concerned about the environment a lot more, and things like concern for refugees. We hear a lot about human trafficking and slavery, and suddenly people realize these things are going on, and the world around us seems to be quite concerned. But what about the church? What is our response to these things? And as I've listened to different people giving Christian responses, there's a variety of ways that we can respond to these things. Some people say, well, this is just sort of secular humanism. This is just the world trying to earn their brownie points and kind of appease their conscience. And other people have said, well, the church should really be leading the way in these things. And then other people have said, but what about, is this us trying to earn our salvation through good works, and where does Christ's salvation and mercy and grace fit into all of that? And that's really what today's sermon is all about. What is godly, biblical social justice? And so I wanted to start with Jesus. That's always a good place. And so the reading that you have just heard comes from the book of Isaiah, from the prophet. It comes from the very first chapter. But at the very beginning of Jesus' ministry, he opened up the scroll of Isaiah to the very end of the scroll, where it was talking a lot about fulfillment and what God had planned to do. And so he is in the same book that we have just heard read, and he gives out this reading, and it's very interesting. So I'm reading, it's from Luke chapter 4, but Jesus is quoting the words of Isaiah the prophet. Jesus came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and it was as was his custom. He went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him, and he unrolled the scroll, and he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who were oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then we're told he rolls up the scroll and he said, "Today this prophecy is fulfilled in your hearing," and that caused quite a stir. In a little while we're going to be watching, I'm going to be stopping, because I wanted to show us a video of some live testimony, some real examples of how these things have impacted people's lives. And so I won't say a lot more about that at the moment. But we know that one of Jesus' prayers that he taught people to pray is, "May your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as in heaven." And I just wanted to say that sometimes we spend a bit of time thinking about what we're being saved from. Right? We don't want to be judged by God. We don't want to go to hell. We're being saved from all of that. But we forget that it's also about what we're being saved to. When we talk about heaven, what do we mean? People from every nation and tribe and language. those who are rich, those who are poor, those who have different races, gathering together and being one family. People being healed of their diseases, people's tears being dried, people being freed from their oppression and pain and affliction. That's what we're being saved to. And Jesus said, my kingdom come, my will is done on this earth as it will be in heaven. I like the words to that song we sing sometimes. Jesus walked on earth showing glimpses of heaven. These are not worldly ideas. These are the ideas that Jesus came to show. And in so many different ways, as he fed those who were hungry and as he restored those who were outcast and as he healed the sick, he was showing glimpses of what is to be. And so last week, as Steve said, he spoke from Micah. Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah. These guys prophesied at the same time. And it's interesting that both Micah and Isaiah talk about this dispute between God and his people as a legal dispute. To put it very practically, Israel had launched a legal lawsuit against God, and God had done a countersuit against them. They had said to God, wait a minute, we have this contract, we have a covenant. You have said that you will bless us and lead us into a land flowing of milk and honey, and now we're seeing these dark days coming upon us. And God is saying, hold on a second. Didn't I say when I took you to Mount Sinai that if you were to do the right things, then I would be your God and you would be my people and you would be holy as I am holy? And you, where is your end of the bargain? And you seem to have forgotten about me. And that raises this question. Is God saying that he expected these people to earn their salvation? And let me just say from the very beginning, the answer is absolutely not. But there's two passages that were on the screen I'm just going to talk to very, very quickly. The first one comes from Romans 12. If you don't know, when Paul decided to explain his full gospel, if you see it, when I go into a city, whether into a synagogue or into the town square, and I preach my gospel, here is what I preach. We get a chance to see Paul's sermon, the way that he presented the gospel. And so for 11 straight chapters, he explains the gospel and unpacks it the way that he did back in the day. Then he hits to chapter 12, and he says, therefore, because of this gospel, here's what I'm asking you to do. I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy that he showed through Christ's sacrifice, now you offer your bodies as living sacrifices. No more sacrifices being taken to the temple. You offer yourself as a living kind of sacrifice by living holy and doing what is pleasing to God. This is your act of true worship. This is your reasonable service for all God has done for you. And it seems like he has in mind a passage that we've already looked at during our Exodus series, where God leads the Israelites out from their slavery, leads them to Mount Sinai, and he says, now I have saved you. I brought you up out of Egypt. I led you through the Red Sea. Here you are. You're receiving my holy law, and I want you now to live out your lives as a holy people. You be holy as I am holy. And to put that very simply, he said, the whole law is summarized in these two things. I want you to love God with your whole heart, and I want you to love your neighbor as you love yourself. If you do these things, then you will be my holy people. But that is not what was happening in Isaiah's day. And so there are four points, and I'm going to go run through them very quickly, that Isaiah says. He brings these charges. He says, you're saying to God, where's all of our blessing? Well, here is God's response to you. And response number one is, you seem to have forgotten who I am. You've forgotten the very heart of God. The children that I raised up, the children that I saved, the children that I led out of Israel, the children that I placed in the promised land and blessed them, you have forgotten about me. He says it in a very pointed way. He says, even the donkey, you know, that we always talk about being stubborn as a mule and, you know, being as dumb as an ass. Well, he said, you know, that even the donkey knows where he's fed. He knows the manger where he stays, but you have totally forgotten who is your God. And because you have forgotten me, you've rebelled against me, and now you're looking for my blessings. Well, remember me. And what did I ask you to do? Love me and love your neighbor as yourself. But you are failing to do that. And then he says something that is very pointed. To this very day, when people talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, it's still something that the average person understands today what we mean. These two cities that were notorious for evil. And God says this very striking thing to the Israelites. He says that unless I had spared you, you would have become like Sodom. You would have become like Gomorrah. And then he goes on to say, now listen to me, you people of Sodom. Listen to me, you people of Gomorrah. In other words, what he's saying to Israel is, guess what? All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Do you think that you are better than those evil cities that I have destroyed? And there are a number of times through the prophets that God said, you know what? If I don't punish you for your sins, I'm going to have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah. If I ignore what you are doing, I'm going to have to apologize to them. You are not, you know, I am not failing to punish you because you are so good and so self-righteous. It's just that I made promises to Abraham and to Moses and to your forefathers. And so I am sparing you. But in the same way that all good parents will show as much mercy as you can, but when you gotta punish, you gotta punish. God says the time for punishment has come. And then he makes another really striking claim. He says, in matter of fact, your religion has become detestable to me. It's sort of interesting for us to kind of put this into our context. So, you know, we've gathered together today for church, right? This is the day of the week, right? We come together, we're going to sing some songs to God, we're going to hear the Bible read and explained, we're going to hear some prayers and everything, we'll be here for an hour or so, and then we're going to go out into our week. And God said to them, don't bother. I hate it. I hate those meetings. I just hate them. Why? Well, he says, you know, this last couple of weeks we had our sewer in our backyard explode, and I, to help out the plumber, I agreed that I would go and do the digging and get down to the pipe so they could come out and find it. So there I am in this hole full of sewer and everything, and a person would come out to give me a drink, and I'd say, don't touch me. But imagine if I had, you know, come straight from there and I'd come walking into the church, you know, and I'm stomping, you know, my feet, or come into your home and, you know, walk through with my sewer feet, you know, across your brand new carpet. And then, you know, I come in here and I raise up hands full of dung to God in praise. What kind of praise is that? And God said, take your filthy feet and your filthy clothes and don't raise your filthy hands before me. Show some respect and show some honor. If you can't even clean yourself up, then don't bother coming into my presence at all. When I was a young teenager, I went 1 year to a Christian college in a small Midwestern town that was a very, very heavily influenced by the Dutch Reformed Church. And one of the interesting things is there was about four or five of these churches, and for a small farming town, if you went to the we don't do this anymore, but if you came through the front of the door, they had the attendance, you know, last week's attendance, and a whole bunch of other figures on a little board. And if you were to go into those four or five churches and add up the attendance and then add up the population of the town, hardly anyone was missing. As a matter of fact, they had what they called blue laws, where you weren't supposed to mow your lawn or open your shops or do anything during, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning or 9 o'clock in the morning. The town was quiet, and those one or two shop owners that ran convenience and fuel stores, they were looked down upon as the pagans in the town. Everyone was in church on a Sunday, and man, during the week, the pubs were full. I have never been in a place where throughout the week, everyone would come stumbling in at night, and they drank heavier and more than anyone that I'd ever had seen. And, you know, it was that whole idea that, you know, they would come and sing their praises to heaven on Sunday, and they would live like hell throughout the week. God said, don't bother. Just don't bother. I can't stand what you're doing. Clean yourself up and then come into my presence. And then God says to the people, he says, look, you've brought this lawsuit against me. Let's resolve the matter. Let's settle this thing out of court. Last week when Steve spoke from Micah, and we're kind of using that as our base thing, he said, here's what I want from you. Love justice and mercy and walk humbly with God. In Isaiah, he says, let's just be reasonable. You know, wash your hands and be cleansed. Stop doing wrong. Start doing right. I'll forgive you. I'll take your blood-stained hands. I'll make you as white as snow. But if you notice, he says, and here's what I want you to do. If there's any response to my forgiveness and my mercy, here's what I'm asking of you. Seek justice. Defend the oppressed. Take up the cause of the fatherless. Plead the case of the widow. You hear all the legal language coming in? They were suing God. He goes, let's settle out of court. Here's what I want you to do. Seek justice. If you're going to go to court, defend the oppressed. If you're going to take up a cause, take up the cause of the fatherless. If you're going to plead a case, then plead the case of the widow. And then come before me, and I will forgive you, and I will make your sins as white as snow. In other words, God expects a humble and a merciful response to the people to whom he has shown mercy. Be merciful, and show as you have been shown mercy, be merciful. You will be forgiven as you forgive, etc. And you notice that he says, plead the case of the widow. And I wanted to finish with this story, because when we go back to Jesus, he tells this story of a persistent widow. We're not told if this is a parable or if this is a story that he actually knew about. But I want to make it very clear, when Jesus is telling this story, he's telling this story to Israel. Israel is what we call a theocracy. It is a religious community. So when he's talking about the leaders and when he's talking about the judges, he's talking about people who judged according to God's law. These were God's religious leaders. And so Jesus, hundreds of years after Isaiah, says, so there was this poor widow, right? You're meant to plead the case of the widow. But she kept on going to a judge, and she was being unfairly oppressed by people who were taking advantage of her. But this godly judge neither feared God nor did he care about people. What are the two great commands? Love God with your whole heart, love your neighbor as yourself. This godly judge couldn't have cared less about either. But this widow kept coming back day after day after day after day. And finally, the judge says to himself, man, I'm going to have to finally just give justice to this woman, because she's going to wear me out. I can't stand to have her coming in my presence anymore. And God says, you know, the judge didn't really care, but first of all, if you're praying about these sort of things, if this judge finally caved in, then know that your good and merciful God will eventually hear your prayers as well. But he finishes that story by saying, but when the Son of Man comes, when he returns, will he find faith on the earth? In other words, God will ultimately be faithful. But when he returns, will he find his children acting in ways that are faithful? Will we be defending those who are weak? Will we be taking up the cause of the orphans? Will we care for the refugees? Will we care about the things that Jesus cared about? God has put these things in front of us to test us, to say, do you care? Do the Israelites, those who were rescued out of slavery, will they care about the slaves and the prisoners? Will those who were foreigners in a foreign land, will they care about foreigners and refugees? Will those people who were completely helpless and being chased down and oppressed by giant armies, will they care about those who are being oppressed? Will they treat others in the way that I have treated them? I'm going to pause there, and we're going to watch a bit of a video. And the reason I chose this is two reasons. Number one, it's good to hear some personal stories about this rather than hearing everything from me. Number two, I wanted to point out that these videos that I'm going to show you, we're just going to watch 10 minutes now. These are videos we've been showing at our Hands and Feet community. Because most people today will tell you that if you're going to talk to people about Christianity, it's not so much prove to us that God created the world, or prove to us that Jesus rose from the dead, or prove to us that the Bible is really reliable. Most people out there today want to know, is God good? What are his people all about? And these videos that we've been watching on matters of social justice and care and concern, they have captured the attention of a lot of the people who come here on a Wednesday afternoon because these are the questions that they're asking. We're going to watch a bit of this, and I'm going to come back and close with a story of my own.